Hey, boys and girls, it is a Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hackadoo.
Daryl Loomis.
Hi-ho.
It's just the three of us. Quick ambush topic. Movie titles with the word three in them, or number three. Go, Mac.
Three Musketeers.
Daryl.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors, the best one.
Oh, I guess. Okay. I should have said no sequels count, but I'm going to go with Three Ninjas. Remember Three Ninjas?
Yeah, Three Ninjas Strike Back was the big one.
I was just like, boy, this tiny 8-year-old. Like, what it really is, a force of a karate punch from a tiny 8-year-old. Is it enough to render an adult male unconscious?
See, the thing is, Dave, is that you are confusing muscle power with amazing ki.
Oh, yeah. So he had ki.
Yeah, he was just brimming with it. His chakras were just going crazy. Oh, right. I mean, it's basically, you know, Dragon Ball Z in those tiny little fists.
All right, good. Well, now that that's out of the way, we're going to continue to kill time for your weekend. So
because that wasn't killing time. That was
important. Important. Hey, Mac, did you know that DC Convergence reboot starts today?
I know that, well, I've heard a lot of hype about it, yeah. It's a little hard to get out to the comic book store these days, but, yeah, certainly there's a lot of excitement about Convergence.
Do you mind if I ask you what that means?
Okay, as I understand it, and this is not, I haven't researched this heavily, but, it's a big event, basically, you know. Every couple of, well, these days there's always big events going on, but one story that affects all of the comics in the whole line.
Gotcha.
And all the characters are involved.
Now, was New 52 not one of those events?
Technically it was, yeah.
Okay.
They did a series called Flashpoint, which destroyed the universe, and then the New 52 was birthed out of Flashpoint.
Okay.
So it wasn't exactly one singular story, so to speak, but there was everyone was all connected in one continuity.
Gotcha. Okay, continue. So, Convergence, are they, like, resetting characters or something?
You know, like I said, I haven't looked into it that deeply, but I know it's the big event, and I know it's, like, they're bringing in alternate realities, so it's, like, past versions of characters that we've seen are going to be meeting up with the current characters.
You know? Sounds like it's going to be confusing.
Yeah, that's kind of the way these things go with these comic book crossovers, and... Marvel's going to be doing the same thing later this year with the new Secret Wars, where all the versions of all the different characters are going to all come together on Battle World, and then once it's all over, the universe is going to be destroyed, and they're going to start everything from scratch. So.
All right. Sounds like fun. All right, so back to what you have cooking. Anything to relate?
Let's see. Well, just earlier today, I went out to the movies, treated myself to a movie. I saw It Follows.
Uh-huh.
Oh, interesting. How is that?
That's a sequel to It, correct?
I was thinking, so is this the prequel or the sequel to It Waits? I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I really like, this is a small...
It happens.
Yeah, it happened one night. this is a sequel, no, I'm sorry, this is a smaller horror movie. It's been getting a lot of buzz. It was going to go VOD, but it got enough positive word of mouth. They released it in theaters. And I figured this week would be my last chance to see it before it gets bumped by Fast and Furious. But I really enjoyed it. This very kind of old-fashioned 80s throwback horror movie. Really simple premise and just kind of done well. The performances are really great. The girl who's the lead, she played the daughter on The Guest, if you saw that movie. And she was really great, and the group of friends around her, you really get the sense that they really are this group of friends, you know? And so the performances were really, really good. And there were a few nitpicks here and there. There were a couple of scenes that made me say, wait, this person wouldn't do that, and this thing wouldn't happen according to that rule. But those are just little things. They do the jump scare thing once too often. You know, Spielberg said you get one jump scare and use it well. You only get one, but they did about three or four. But those are nitpicks. For the most part, I really enjoyed the movie. I really got a kick out of it. I went in spoiler free, knowing as little as about it as I could, and I think that really paid off because it's the plot really keeps you guessing and really keeps you, not sure where the, the villain, the monster, whatever, is. You never know where it's going to come from next. So it's apropos to the premise of, it's always being followed. It's you get that paranoid feeling of, always want to look over your shoulder and be like, oh, where is it, where is it going to come from? So, I dug it.
All right.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm totally blank on it, too. All I've seen are the IMDb ads for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you said it's good because I was fairly turned off by all of the pull quotes saying it's the greatest horror movie in a decade and whatever, this kind of stuff. So I'm glad to hear that it's going to be worth my time. So I'll definitely give it my time.
Yeah, greatest of the decade. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to jump on that bandwagon.
That second segment by the Raid 2 director in VHS 2 is probably the best thing I've seen this decade.
Uh-huh. Excellent.
Did you ever see that, Dave?
VHS 2, no.
It's worth your time to just watch the segment by.
Gareth.
Oh, golly. Yeah.
Edwards or
yeah.
Edwards or Evans, one of the two.
Evans, I think. And it's got a lot of the same cast as the Raid movies.
Yep.
And it's like a cult kind of, these filmmakers go in to film a cult. And it's messed up.
Okay.
That's way worth watching.
Well, like Uwe is in this? Like all those guys from the Raid are in it?
Not all of them, but the older guy in the kitchen fight?
Yeah.
I believe it's T who is the cult leader.
Okay.
And he's a scary dude. All
right, what are they doing in that cult? What, a human sacrifice and that kind of stuff?
I mean, just check it out.
I can't guarantee I will.
It's on Netflix.
Just that one. It may not be as good as the Raid as the Raid 2, but it's a pretty dang fun sequence. About 20 minutes long.
All right. Okay, very good. Anything else, Mac?
Anything else? I watched the first season of The 100 on Netflix. You want to talk? I guess a lot of people like this show. It's got a fan base. So I thought it was really cheesy.
But you went through the whole season?
Yeah, I just kind of marathoned it. Once I started, I'm like, well, let's see where this is going. Actually, I was kind of more laughing at it along than laughing with it because I thought it was really goofy. So it's the future, and mankind lives in space, and 100 teenagers get sent down to Earth to find out whether or not, you can live on Earth again because there was a nuclear war that killed the Earth, but now there's air on Earth again. And so they're basically teenage space castaways, and they're living in the forest, and they're having teenage space castaway adventures. So it's all very – it's got a Hunger Games feel to it. It's the dystopia and their wilderness survival, but everyone's hair looks great. Everyone just has perfect hair in the wilderness dystopia. So, but I was just reading a thing online. Tor.com did a review of the first two seasons, and man, they loved it. They just raved about how great they thought it was. And I was like, were we watching the same show? Because I thought it was really, really goofy and silly. But that was my other thing.
All right, not a ringing endorsement. All right, Derek, go ahead.
A couple quick things. I watched on Sunday, the premiering on HBO was the documentary Going Clear.
Yes, me too. I watched that as well.
On Scientology. And I wasn't unfamiliar with a lot of the stuff with that. I had already previously read the article about Paul Haggis in New York Magazine that came out a few years ago, and had read some parts of the equivalent book, which is incredibly more exhaustive. But I think it was very interesting, well put together, and a whole lot more people are going to watch that than read 1,100 pages or however long it is.
Yes, right.
But, yeah, it pretty much puts a capper on me feeling like Tom Cruise is a huge creep.
I guess I kind of came away with that more sympathetic to Tom Cruise than I thought I would be.
Well, I came away a lot more sympathetic to John Travolta than I thought I would be.
See, I think just both, right. I mean, see, for Travolta, I think, you know, it sounded like they got dirt on him, right, or whatever.
So, right.
But, like, Cruise, I just feel like the guy's, like, literally brainwashed.
You know? Oh, I think that's right. I think that's right.
I just think, and, you know, maybe I like his movies a lot. I don't know. But, like, I just feel like just how they described it, and when you see him, like, accepting that ridiculous medal that they made up for him, and it's just so corny, but it meant a lot, you know? It's just like, this is a guy, and he was someone who was drifting away from Scientology, right? And they kind of, I just feel like, I mean, I just felt sympathetic. I'm not going to say he's not weird and he didn't weird me out or whatever, but I had some pangs of sympathy for him because
I think
everything
fair.
Else around him was like so sinister, manipulating, like that Miscavige creep, right? I mean,
well, Miscavige is the worst.
He's the worst, and
I take that back because I don't have the money to pay lawsuits.
No. And we're talking about a different Miscavige.
Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. They're not David.
Not
Elmer.
David. Yeah, Gilmer Miscavige. Yeah. So yeah, no, I don't. So, yeah,
but it was right. But I felt like it was a really well produced talking head style documentary. Not an artistically adventurous documentary, but well put together informational doc.
Yeah, and I don't think I left there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I didn't realize, you know, the abuse and all that kind of weird stuff was, you know. But again, you know, when they're doing musical chairs and people are not eating and blah blah blah. But again, it just seemed like
it's brainwashing. It's what it felt like.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a lot of people. Beck's in there, and I would always have assumed that Beck was an intelligent person, being a relative fan of his music. Elizabeth Moss is part of it, and she's relatively young. It still goes on.
Is she currently a Scientologist?
As far as I know.
Yeah. Huh.
But I mean, I could be wrong about that, but that's what I understand. And, I mean, I guess I understand it from from the actor's perspective because there's a history of people getting great roles through this money, John Travolta being the primary. And so I can see actors, knowing a few myself and how insecure they are, or can be.
Yeah.
That the idea, I mean, they do face rejection all the time.
Sure.
I mean, so the idea of a certain level of guarantee that they're going to get work, it doesn't surprise me that they join, but it does kind of surprise me that they stay.
I think it goes beyond, I think to me, the auditing... To me, is like there's some I'm not saying it's actual psychology, but the psychology of like addressing these things and talking about these things has some kind of staying power for them. I think.
And some positive effect probably. Right. But what really cracks me up is how actual psychologists and psychiatrists are SPs, suppressive people, and. You know, psychiatry is the enemy of that thing, even though I completely agree with you. That's basically a psychological trick or tool or whatever you want to call it. But, it's that confounds me. That's the one that confounds me.
Yeah, you figure once they got a crack at the L. Ron Hubbard handwritten notes, things would go a little off the rails.
Yeah, once you've spent – and I think what might be part of the issue – albeit maybe a small part, but potentially an important one, is that so when you go in and get your first audit or whatever, you don't hear about the DC-9s, the atom bomb 75 million years ago. You don't hear any about it. You don't hear about Xenu.
Right.
It's only after you've put in hundreds of thousands of dollars that you start to hear about this kind of crazy business. And because before that, it's just self-help. And as silly as I think a lot of that is, that's all, I mean, I people are all over it. I mean, those if I could write a self-help book,
man,
I'd be, yeah, you totally did. So I get that, but I think there's a part of it where people have put this much money into it, and then they realize, holy cow, this is crazy, but if I admit to the crazy now, I've not only wasted this much money, like, it's an embarrassing amount of money that I've wasted. Yeah. And so they sort of live in this level, on this level of denial, where it's not somehow insane. Worth watching. You know, available on demand on HBO Go if you've got that. And well worth watching.
Yeah. All right. And I'll go TV as well. So, Mac, how about that Flash episode?
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. Still getting a kick out of the show.
A lot of big reveals for yesterday.
Yeah, this and the week before. I don't know where you want to begin. Well, first of all...
Yeah, who cares? We'll go spoiler.
I don't care.
Daryl. Yeah, if you're listening...
The time travel thing was interesting because, you know, we all know time travel is a huge part of the Flash mythology. And now they've right. introduced it, and now the can of worms is opened. And I think it was good we had a whole episode explaining this is why you can't go back in time and fix bad things that happened. Because now, in the future, bad things are going to happen, and we don't have to ask that question. So I thought that was very smart of them. It was fun to see Captain Cold and Heatwave again. Those guys are awesome. And then this week, we got Wells' backstory.
That's right, there you go, curveball central.
Kind of, yeah, but again, it's just sort of, it's explaining how these things came about, you know, it's explaining the backstory. So it's not really a shocking reveal, but more like a, you know, this is how it happened and this is how we got to where we are today.
I would say I was pretty, I'm not shocked, but I was pretty surprised when Eobard revealed himself to be something totally different than Tom Cavanaugh. You know, I thought
that's true. When they did it first, I thought they were introducing one of the other people who've been the Flash in the comics. And I was like, what? But no, that wasn't the case. They're probably saving that for future seasons.
There's some good throwback stuff with Mark Hamill. You know,
during
the early 90s. And they were actually used stills from the early 90s show, like archive.
That was great.
And then Mark Hamill said, I'm your father.
And they let him have a scene with the John Wesley Shipp, who was the 90s Flash. They did a scene together. Yeah.
That's right. And then the preview for this home stretch of the episode is just bonkers. I mean, just like Arrow's in it and Adam's in it and Grodd shows up.
Yeah, we know Grodd is coming because there's an episode coming up called Grodd. But Arrow's going back, and how on earth are they going to pull off the Adam? That's I'm really scratching my head over that. But I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a blast.
It is. I mean, they are. This is. You know, they are generous with the DC properties. You know, they are.
I know of all the major villains, Mirror Master has yet to make his debut, and he must be saving him for season two.
Plus, we got that third spinoff coming with Adam and Captain Cold and Heatwave, right?
That's going to be the team up show.
Yeah. So Firestorm's in that one. So yeah, looks like all bets are off. Everybody.
It's going to be kind of
Superman and Batman are welcome. I think you know.
But and CBS is doing Supergirl.
That's right.
And part of the deal with CBS is that it's going to be the same continuity with Flash and Arrow.
Interesting. I didn't.
That's very interesting. That's kind of surprising, actually.
Yeah. All right.
One quick thing. Speaking of bonkers.
Yeah.
That Mad Max trailer.
I know, bonkers.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of the franchise necessarily. I mean, it's fun and all, but not a huge fan, but that trailer makes me want to see it really a lot. It just looks it looks like an insane film.
And I do hear it's just one extended car chase scene, you know. So,
really? Which is great.
There are two things holding – there's a lot in its favor. George Miller back at the helm. Tom Hardy is a great choice for Mad Max. It seems to capture the spirit of the Road Warrior, which is the one I like the most of the three. You know, it's like Road Warrior, Mad Max, and then Thunderdome's down there. But
there's only one with Tina Turner.
That's true. So, you know, Road Warrior to me is like one of the single greatest action scenes ever. It's that half-hour car chase. And this one sounds like it's like the full-on. And even though it looks pretty CGI in there, I've heard that they try to keep it as practical as possible. So we'll see. But my two, and these are really faux nitpicks, but one is it's still PG-13, you know? I mean, look, I want, you know, let's get all the kids Mad Max, and that's great, but if there's a director's cut out there, give it to me because
I can't
the
speak
Road Warrior
Mac.
Benefited from the R rating.
Yeah, I can't speak for Mac necessarily, but I know that there are two people on this podcast who prefer hard R.
Oh yes, at least for this movie. I mean,
for not for every movie, not for Care Bears
or Two by the Dozen Free. You know?
Yeah, I'm just context matters, you know. That if you want, you know, if it deserves, if the story deserves a hard R, then go hard R. If the story does not deserve it, then it doesn't have to.
And I agree with
and
that.
And you know what deserves hard R? The Road Warrior.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Thunderdome was PG-13, if memory serves.
I think Thunderdome was PG-13.
But like, Road Warrior,
and it was
really
also
benefited.
Decidedly lame.
I mean, Road Warrior was in like super gory, but you know the gags that deserve the R rating added some to it.
And I wouldn't call Road Warrior hard R either. Just an R-rated movie, but I want a little bit of meat. You know, I don't want them to cut corners with the violence just to get the kiddies in.
And then my number two thing, but this is only going off of trailers. All the trailers so far made it almost seem like Max is a passenger, and Charlize Theron's character seems to be more, you know. Like the more focal point, which I can't imagine is true, but the trailers have given me that vibe. So I'm just wondering how that's going to shake out. Like I like Charlize Theron, you know, and I mean her stint as Rita in Arrested Development, obviously,
of course,
stuff of legend. So she will always have my respect. But I just want to make sure Max himself isn't marginalized.
Okay, speaking of her stint in Arrested Development. What was the name of her development plan?
Wee Britain?
No, well...
She owned Wee
the
Britain.
One she developed... She owned Wee Britain, but the one that she developed after that.
Let's see. Well, I know that George had issues...
Come on, Dave.
It's not Bluthton, is it?
It's not Bluthton, no.
All right. Because George felt like she ripped his Bluthton idea off.
She did. That's the line. But do you remember the name of it?
Mac, you know this one?
The only thing that's coming into my head is Mr. F.
I don't know. What is it?
That's something else having to do with her.
It's C. Britain.
Oh, C. Britain. All right. But one of the best Easter eggs was when Rita is sitting on a park bench that says "We Britain" on the back.
And Wee Brain. Brain.
Just fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people, when it was airing, my brother was really dead set on this, that angle was forced to get Charlize Theron in there, and it didn't look good. But on repeat viewings, she goes to a school called, oh, God, what's the school she goes to? It's like Slowville or something like that. There's hints everywhere of what, you know, of her mental disabilities. But that's the beauty of the show. It's so subtle with that stuff. You got to watch it 3 or 4 times to start seeing those things.
All right, boy, we're really getting off track. Okay, and my last little thing was another TV show. You've long heard me talk up the glory of Cinemax's Banshee series, which I really feel is like just pulp, perfect pulp.
Never watched, and I really need to.
I just heartily endorse it. So as I am wont to do, when a new season rolls around, I pick up Cinemax for like a month or two, you know, so and then binge watch the show that I want. So I've been... really tearing through season 3, which is just great. Watched an episode that was a complete homage to Assault on Precinct, whatever, right?
13,
yeah. Right. And it was just a whole hour of just the sheriff's department kind of huddled in the police station, barricading doors, fighting against a... And because you're always seeing stuff you've never seen. So, like, the bad guys this time are like... an Indian, like a Native American gang, you know, so and they've hijacked a U.S. weapons shipment and they've declared war, like on the sheriff's department. It's just super badass. So, I mean, Banshee just continues to deliver. So if you have not seen it, start from season 1 and drink it up because it is, it really is just, I mean, it's, as far as action shows on TV, nothing much really touches it except for even like maybe Strike Back on the same network. But, you know, just like badassery, macho action, pulp, goodness. It's pretty unrivaled. So, once again, that's my endorsement for Banshee. So, track it down, friends. Track it down. All right. Anything for the site, Mac?
For the site, yeah, the review just went up. It's a movie I actually didn't enjoy very much, even though I'm told a lot of people really did enjoy it. It's Unbroken.
Right.
Which is the film Angelina Jolie directed about the life of, what's his first name? Zamperini is his last name, who is the Olympic medal winner who was taken as a prisoner of war in World War II.
Yeah.
And when I saw the ads for the movie originally when it was in theaters, I thought to myself, well, this looks like 2 hours of a guy being tortured. And now I get the Blu-ray, I put it in, and look how right I was. It's 2 hours of a guy being tortured. And it's just, I don't think it's doing service to this guy's amazing life story. You know, his time in the Olympics is brushed through in like a couple of really quick scenes. And then we get him in the war aboard an airplane, in an airplane fight, and that was actually filmed really well. But then we go straight from there into first having to survive on the ocean and then being captured and becoming a prisoner of war, and just, and all the horrors and the humiliations and everything that he endured. And that's it. That's all the movie does. And there's, I'm going to spoil it, but who cares? There's a text crawl at the end of the movie. You know, lots of biopics do this where they say, and, you know, and then he went on to do such and such. And it, and the, like in two sentences of text, we have the whole second half of the story about, like, you know, how he overcame his PTSD and he later he made peace with his captors. And I'm like, why isn't that in this movie? Why isn't that the second hour of this movie? That's the drama. That's the character development. But I guess we can't have that when we're just, we got to have all the torture. I don't know. I don't get it.
And what I wonder, and I actually edited this review, so I was wondering this before. So torture cells. I mean, we all establish that there's six Saw movies. but what makes this fundamentally different than Saw, except for couching it as a drama and a true story? Both of them are just people being tortured for 2 hours. And one's torture porn, and the other's, you know, a drama people want to go see because Angelina Jolie directed it. Would people go see Saw 7 if Angelina Jolie directed it? I don't think so.
First of all, I think there is a Saw 7. That was the 3D one, right?
Oh, is there? So 8,
yeah.
Whatever.
neither here nor there. The other thing is Unbroken, it's getting praise for being, you know, uplifting. We're supposed to be like, oh, he overcame it all. And, you know,
as long as you make sure the text crawl.
It's the triumph of the human spirit, you know. But my argument is that we don't actually see that in the movie. We're only told it.
When we don't care about that necessarily. Like, we pretend like we care about that. But the movie that's selling tickets is somebody being tortured for 2 hours.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty sad. I mean, even though, I mean, a couple of the Saw movies are pretty good. So, you know, but I'm not the modicum of a, what do I want to say? Virtue around here. So, you know, I'm not the person to ask.
All right, what do you got?
Nothing, actually. I haven't done any reviews for the site in a couple of weeks. I got busy and got behind on some stuff, and I have nothing that is worth talking about. But I had a second thing that I wanted to mention briefly that I don't have anything really to say about, but I want to mention how excited I am. I purchased the other day, haven't had a chance to play it yet, Pillars of Eternity. A new game by Obsidian Entertainment, who made Fallout New Vegas, most recently in my experience, but a lot of the role-playing game sequels. And by word of mouth and by screenshots, it appears to be the legit progression from Baldur's Gate 2 to what was supposed to be Baldur's Gate 3, which never came out. And it's an old-school isometric RPG based on a version of Dungeons & Dragons rules, but apparently it's super fun, and very much in the spirit. And I look forward to this weekend when I am going to spend 72 hours playing it straight. So anyway, in lieu of something for the site.
There's very good. That. I would appreciate it. I'll only give you I'm not sure if I mentioned this series. Did I mention the Metal Hurlant Chronicles?
Is that a heavy metal magazine?
Yeah, so I didn't put two and two together when it showed up at my doorstep to review, but it's a French production with made for sci-fi network type of feel. It's an anthology series, the Metal Hurlant Chronicles, and each episode, they're all standalone shows. They're taken from the heavy metal.
Interesting.
Okay.
Like the heavy metal, the more recent.
I haven't looked at a heavy metal in probably 15 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was okay. I mean, I watched them all, and it kind of kept my interest. Like, the actors you'll recognize, but they're definitely, like, C-tier, you know? Like, you got Rutger Hauer, Michael Jai White, James Marsters, you know, those guys.
C-level? This...
Do you think C-level? Hey, I like Black Dynamite as much as the next guy, but, I mean, Michael Jai White just hasn't really... been around much. So Scott Atkins, who I do like, but is definitely C-level. So I don't know. It was pretty interesting. They were pretty good. Some, like any anthology series, are hit and miss, you know. And it was definitely sci-fi oriented, you know, so a lot of stuff in space. I would say the effects were, like, really schizophrenic. Like, sometimes they'd be brutally bad. But then, like, some of the space stuff were really good. So I can't, like, it's hard to pin down what worked and what didn't work. What I did find, like, weirdly enjoyable in a hackneyed way were, like, the twists that showed up. Like, some of the twists were really on the nose. I'm going to spoil a couple for you. Do you mind?
No.
No? You don't mind? Good. I'm going to just go ahead and spoil. So, there's one episode. It was, like, the future, and it was, like, real dystopian. And they started to unfreeze people who had been cryogenically frozen, you know? And they're talking about this one guy they unfroze, and... some political fall or whatever, but they decided to, like, kill him or something, and they take him away, and you see him scrawling, and he's drawing something, and then the last scene is you find out what he's drawing was Mickey Mouse, because it was Walt Disney, who then, yeah, weird, yeah, another one where Scott Atkins played a Starship pilot, and he and this girl get away, and then enter a portal, and they land on prehistoric Earth, where they find a serpent and an apple, and they are Adam and Eve.
That's the oldest sci-fi cliche since ever.
So there's that. So some of these twists are pretty on the nose. There's a couple that are even more ridiculous that'll come to me. But so, yet I was still moderately entertained. There's only two seasons, but if you like anthologies, it might be worth checking out. So. All right. Well, we know what's next. Let's get right to it, gentlemen. Ambush topic time. So, Daryl, why don't you kick us off?
All right. I don't have one, so I'm going to go ahead.
We could go in the vault and pick some old ones. Do we want to do that?
We could do that. That's a little. That's a gimmick we haven't done in a while.
Mac, have you tirelessly prepared?
I did have one prepared, but it can wait till another week.
All right. Let's see here. So... take a look. I guess we can go real far back. I'm going to go to... Here, give me a month. Matt, give me a month.
December. Okay.
Daryl, give me a year.
09.
Okay, ooh. Were we doing this in 09? I guess, right?
I don't know. Say 11, then.
I know. July 1st, 2010. Is the first one. So,
oh, okay.
11. So December, we'll go in December and somewhere in 2011. Okay. Let's see. And then we'll pick. Oh, this is great pod. This is great radio.
This is great radio.
Fantastic.
This isn't dead air. This is anticipation.
It is.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Okay, here we go. All right, this is pretty good. okay. How should we do this here?
Just read three off.
Read three off? Okay, first one for us. severed heads that spring back to life. Severed heads that spring back to life.
All right. This one is surprisingly easy for me. One of my favorite non-Argento Italian horror movies. And it's not even technically an Italian horror movie. I think it was American produced. It may not have been. I don't remember. But is Michele Soavi, Argento's main protege. He made a movie called Cemetery Man.
Yes.
With Rupert Everett. And I would have to think this was one of the answers in that podcast. Cemetery Man features... So Rupert Everett is a gravedigger. And he has an Igor-type character as his henchman. That Igor-type character gets his head lopped off. And one of the women in the movie falls in love with it after it reemerges to life. And they have a little... the B plot is of that movie basically is that romance. So that's pretty fun.
All right. I'm going to go with Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey when the Ted robot, his head comes flying off. the Keanu robot or the Bill, no, the Ted robot, no, Bill head comes off. Ted robot takes it. And then slam dunks it into the waste bin.
Nice. Oh, that's a good one.
That's right.
Let's see. I'll try not to go with an obvious one. So,
Freddy vs. Jason?
That is an obvious one. That's a good one, too. Okay. Now, I'll go with Sword of the Valiant, which is a completely ridiculous retelling of the legend of Sir Gawain from King Arthur times. And... Sean Connery, during his slumming it years, he plays the Green Knight, and he gets his head chopped off and rolls across the floor. And in the phoniest special effect you've ever seen in your life, the severed head says, "Body, come to me." And the body walks over, picks up the head, and puts it back on. And it's such an obvious, like, puppet, and the mouth only just sort of works as it says that. So...
That's excellent. Another one that I want to talk about, just because I like to pump this movie, is the your answer reminded me of, Dave, was Hardware. Yeah. Australian horror movie, but not really a horror movie. Well, kind of a horror movie, horror sci-fi dystopian universe. Guy brings, or he's a scavenger in the wasteland, brings a robot head to his artist girlfriend who likes working with metals. And the robot head winds up rebuilding itself through some mechanism into its robot, which is ends up being the whole premise of the horror. But it's the song that he builds himself back up to is Ministry Stigmata, and it flashes, it's a montage between the robot rebuilding itself with an old Guar video, all to Ministry Stigmata. It's a fantastic scene and one of my favorite scenes in all of horror, so anyway.
It kind of sounds like Chappie, just replace Guar with South African rappers.
Well, Hardware's from, like, 1991, so Chappie's ripping off Hardware right now.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, next one. Correct answer is The Thing, where the guy's head gets cut off and it grows spider legs.
Of course.
Oh, that's right. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
Okay, here we go. Another one. Irritating kids in Christmas.
Is there a box to check for all of them?
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you what kid I especially hated. And it's not like the movie is high art, so it wasn't, like, ruined by it. But, like, the twerp in the Santa Claus sucked. The little kid. Like, oh, it's just so annoying.
Oh, the Tim Allen Santa Claus?
Yeah.
Santa Claus.
Yeah. Yeah, just a little dink.
All right, so I've got very little experience with Christmas movies in general. But I will go with the little ruddy-faced kid in The Christmas Story, and I don't have any idea what his name is or whatever, but a little ruddy-faced kid in The Christmas Story who makes the other kid lick the metal pole.
Oh, okay. The kid who licks the pole is Flick. The main character is Ralphie.
Yeah.
You're talking about the third kid who says, "I double dog dare you."
Yeah. All right.
What was his name?
I do not remember.
Oh, Schwartz. Schwartz, right?
Schwartz?
Yeah, a little jerk.
A real little jerk.
All right. Oh,
boy. Annoying kids in the Christmas movies. I don't know. I mean, there's the sister in Home Alone who's trying to learn French, and she calls Kevin Le Incompetent.
That's pretty irritating.
Know it all.
Yeah, that's pretty irritating. Yeah, good one. Good one. Okay, now, Mac, I might need your help on this because I don't remember. All I see here is movie word association. What do you think that means? Because it's either that or casting the worst actor to play Khan in Star Trek 2. So, I don't know. I mean, I got nothing for that one. So, Daryl, do you have any idea what movie word association might be? You're on this podcast, by the way.
Was I? Was I doing the podcast in 2011?
It says Daryl finds Deadwood doesn't live up to the hype.
I disagree with that now.
Well, take it up with yourself.
It does live up to the title.
And I also and it says Mac finishes Assassin's Creed. So,
and I did. Yeah,
real thrilling stuff for Mac in that week.
That would have been Assassin's Creed 3, I guess. Not Assassin's Creed 2. That was a little earlier, I think. But anyway, I don't know. But why don't we do it this way?
Okay.
Each of us comes up with a one-word title.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a double ambush topic. Each one of us comes up with a one-word title, and the other one or the others associate it with another movie.
It's got to be a title or just a word?
Or just a word. Let's just do a word.
That's got to be the first thing that comes to your mind, movie or TV related.
You know what? And also that sounds like one of my early ambush topics.
All right.
So I'm probably the jerk that made it hard for everybody.
I'm just an esoteric. That's okay, so a word and then first movie or TV-related thing that comes to it.
Yes.
To your mind. So
I'll go first. Tool.
All right. Tool. First one that came to mind was Ash strapping the chainsaw to his stumpy hand.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
Nice, nice.
That's way more awesome than the one I thought of.
Go ahead. What'd you get?
2001 A Space Odyssey. The apes touch the obelisk, and then they learn to use tools right after by picking up a bone and smashing all the other bones. And then he throws it up in the sky, and it comes down a spaceship to show that thousands of years later, we haven't evolved. We're just still apes using tools.
That's good. I like where you went with that.
Very good, very good. All right, I'll go with 1978 horror movie, The Toolbox Murders.
I actually saw that. That's
Cameron Mitchell,
Toby Hooper, right?
No, the director's Dennis Donnelly, who's not well known for anything. But it's Cameron Mitchell, who's a longtime Italian. You know, he's American, but longtime Italian horror, Italian crime actor. And it's you got movies like Driller Killer, where the dude uses a drill. And you got, you know, Jason uses a machete and Freddy's got his glove and all that sort of stuff. The Toolbox Murders is like all bets are off. You got a tool in the toolbox. How do you kill somebody with it? And that movie goes to town on it. It's fun as hell.
And I just like that for the record, there was a 2004 version.
I just noticed that.
Directed by Toby Hooper, which I did review.
So Toby Hooper actually did direct a version of
it. Yeah.
That's absurd.
Yeah.
Okay. That's
absurd. I'm not sure what the... I'm pretty sure I reviewed it, so I'm not sure...
Because in 1978, when the Toolbox Murders came out, I would have loved to have seen Toby Hooper's version of that.
I did review it. I gave it an 80, whatever that means.
An 80?
Yeah.
Hey, all right.
It's not 70s Toby Hooper remaking it. It's 2000s Toby Hooper remaking it.
Yeah, those are different things.
So
good. Okay. I guess
okay, I'll go next. The word for you guys will be, I'm just looking around my room right now, painting.
All right, I'm going to go with something that, while not out of my realm, is something I don't talk about that often, but is my love, genuine love, for the films of Peter Greenaway, whose most famous film is The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover, but also made Drowning by Numbers and some super weird documentaries from the 70s. He has an obsession with Vermeer that I can't explain, but I love. And he made a movie, I think it was his movie just prior to The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover, called A Zed in Two Knots, about a pair of twins who marry a pair of twins, and the female twins die in a car accident. And they both deal with, they also run a zoo. That's where a Zed in Two Knots comes from. They both deal with their pain, with their grief in different ways. One brother starts watching David Attenborough's cellular expansion, or, you know, life documentaries narrated by David Attenborough. The other one decides to start remaking Vermeer paintings by getting, or a particular one, by getting a model and then deciding that her body isn't getting the painting right, so starts cutting off limbs of her so that he can then repaint it and get everything exactly correct as the way the painting was. And it's a... Peter Greenaway's movies are some of the most bizarre things ever.
I want to be a fly on the wall in the meeting when he's pitching this to the studio.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine. It's an insane film. It's also, Peter Greenaway has the note on that end, and A Zed in Two Knots is really primary in that there isn't a single Greenaway movie that I've ever watched that I haven't fallen asleep to the first time I've watched it. But yet I keep going back and rewatching it until I get through the whole damn thing, and then I am thoroughly happy. He's always a crap. For me, he's a crap pleaser. He does the thing, and those gruesome things in totally mundane situations are a real hallmark of his. And that Vermeer painting business is crazy.
Wow.
Are you trying to light a cigarette lighter, by the way? Somebody like trying to light a lighter.
My mic's getting clicks, I think.
Okay. All right, Mac, do you have a painting one?
Painting. I'm still going through all of the new Twin Peaks Blu-rays. And yes. In the movie Fire Walk With Me, there's a memorable scene with the painting in Laura Palmer's room. I don't know if you've gotten to the movie yet or not, David. I don't want to spoil it for you, but...
I've not gotten to the movie.
It's a really creepy, crazy scene. Really takes
viewers
in. What's
the painting of, Mac? Because that's not going to spoil anything for Dave, I don't think. I don't remember that.
It's just like a painting of... It's a picture of a doorway.
Oh, yep.
It's totally completely boring looking, but then crazy stuff happens. Yeah.
Yep. That's awesome.
Unfortunately, you go back, you watch the first couple of episodes, and the cops are in Laura's bedroom. The painting is not there. It's a huge continuity error.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know as the fans, they go back and watch those first episodes because they're trying to find the painting in, like, the first episode. But no, they invented it for the movie.
And I'm not sure that it even exists in the material that's based on the Jennifer Lynch... The whatever it's called, the Diary of Laura Palmer.
The Secret Diary?
The Secret Diary of Laura Palmer. Yeah, I don't even think it's in there, if I remember correctly. But it's been a long time since I've read that.
All right. I guess mine will be...
You just did yours.
Mine and Joe's favorite, Deathbed.
Oh, God. The bed that eats.
For painting. Isn't the guy, there's some guys trapped in the painting. He's the deathbed's conscience. He scolds deathbed constantly.
It's the stupidest movie ever.
That's a great movie. That's great. Okay. Let's finish this up lightning quick. Matt, go ahead. Whatever you see, word association, go.
We didn't say Ghostbusters 2 for the painting with what's his name.
Oh, we should. Vigo the
Vigo, yeah, all right.
Actually, you know, I started a Tumblr blog called Vigo the Carpathian 2012, like for a presidential run. I thought it would have been a good idea, but it kind of petered out. So, go ahead. All right.
Okay, final word. Ocean.
I guess I have to say it. If I'm true to myself, what popped in my head immediately was Point Break.
Of course.
First thing that popped into my head was Jaws.
That's good. That makes sense as well. This is a good straightforward one, Mac. Let's take us out on a high note.
Now imagine Patrick Swayze from Point Break fighting the shark from Jaws.
Oh, that'd be great.
I'm going to go with singer Billy Ocean and the music video for When the Going Gets Tough, the Tough Get Going.
Fair enough.
Because that video was created to promote the movie Jewel of the Nile. And so you have Kathleen Turner, Danny DeVito, and Michael Douglas, or Billy Ocean's backup singers, in the video. And you watch the video, and it's really fascinating to watch Michael Douglas, because in some of the shots, he looks like he totally does not want to be there at all. But in other of the shots, he's like all smiling and happy, and he's totally into it. So I have no idea if this is true. This is only a theory. But I'm wondering if somebody, like, you know, gave him a couple of drinks, you know, around halfway through the shoot.
I think it's a good thing.
Loosen him up a little bit, maybe. It's only a theory, but that's my guess.
Nice. All right. And with that, I think we are done, gentlemen. So Friday Film is there. DVDverdict.com is the email. Thanks for listening. Mac, take it away.
Mr. F.